everybody.
Is that time again?
It is. Okay.
So I have to say, if I lose control in the next couple of seconds, is because I'm still trying to calm down from the fact that. See, I knew I couldn't hold it. So Paul's getting all pumped up, ready to go for the show, and grabs his Dr. Pepper, which you can't see on the screen because I told him to put it off over there.
No branding. Yep.
And if for whatever reason during the show you see us start scrambling, that's because when Paul's talking with his hand, he goes like this and it falls all over the floor.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he goes to take a sip. Of course, he's saying, oh, look at my shirt, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, he gets wet.
But that's what I do. My wife can attest to that.
Yeah. Well, it's just because, see, mentally, for Paul, it's the end of June. He's at the pool already. Yesterday, he was saying to me, last minute breaking, he's like, so let's move the show to the pool. And I'm like, wow, that's a great idea. You can't tell me that the day before.
Yeah.
Okay. So
it was worth a try anyways, right?
What I do think, though, is for next episode, we're all going over to Paul's house, and we're going to chill at his pool.
We'll see what we can do.
Now, a little disclaimer for that one, though. I don't know how you're going to want to do your own electronics by the pool, but should you guys get wet, it is not our fault.
No.
All right?
Fair enough.
Okay. So he's busy building the set, so we're going to see what that looks like. and we'll go from there because, hey, we're technology guys. I don't know. I know for me, I cannot build a damn thing. So if you can build sets and stuff like that, all the power to you. But I think we should probably focus on Visual Studio rather than Visual Studio that we're actually good at versus building sets and patios and pools and stuff like that, which we could probably fake it, but I don't know that I would.
Yeah, I'm not very handy when it comes to things like that. So, right. Yeah. So let's stick to the technology.
We probably should. These guys are all tuned in to see new and shiny tools, too.
Yes, right? Yes, absolutely.
Now, of course, Paul came up with the episode title, and I said to him, okay, so if you're going to go out and you're going to say, everybody, we're showing you shiny new tools, it better be good. So he promised to make it awesome.
I will do my best. So he's bringing it up, and then now,
okay.
Thanks, Jonathan. That's great.
My pleasure. So here's the deal. Okay, so I'm looking at, they want to know in the chat there where the house is. We're not going to tell you that.
No.
We're going to bring you in through the camera. You're not actually showing up at his house.
My wife probably would not appreciate it.
No.
Too many people. Yeah.
That and equipment, too many people. Let's just, we'll keep it a virtual show, all right?
Yeah.
Cool. So here's the deal. As you know, this show is live, and so as Paul is showing us cool, shiny new tools, and you know that I always love challenging Paul to do crazy new things. In fact, I believe he's going to do some JavaScript today. We'll see how that works. We all know he's a .NET guy, but anyway.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So if you feel like challenging Paul, by all means, stick it in the chat. We'll see how it goes from there. Or if you have any questions or anything like that while we're doing our thing, that's why we bring you in live, so
right.
You can ask those questions.
Yep. Jonathan will manage the chat window and interrupt me when necessary so we can answer any questions you have during the process.
Because what he's saying is that really I have no idea what I'm doing in Visual Studio. Which is not true.
Exactly. I was going to say, he sells himself short so that he doesn't have to do the demos himself.
Listen, someone has to entertain you and someone has to be the expert. So together, we're going to do this.
We'll try.
All right. So what are we going to talk about today, though?
All right. So, okay, there we go. We're going to do basically three things today. We're going to show you two updates from Visual Studio 2013 to start. So update two. Which, if you're an avid user of Visual Studio 2013, you may already know that Update 2 is already available. Was it available, I want to say, around the March timeframe or so? But basically, this is all goodness that's available to you today. You can download the update for free, and then you can set that up to your Visual Studio instance, and then you're good to go. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about the next update that's coming out, and that's called Update 3, as you probably can imagine. Talk a little bit about some of the things around what we're thinking of bringing to you, or the product team is thinking of bringing you. And then we'll give you an early look at the next major version of Visual Studio, which is Visual Studio codename 14. So there is no specific name to it. I wouldn't necessarily look at 14 being saying that we're going to bring it out this year. I don't know, to be honest.
It's all the disclaimers.
Well, I want to make sure that everybody's aware of the fact that we're not making any forward-looking statements other than what's actually been provided out by the product team already. Because A, that gets us in trouble if we do, and B, if we say the wrong thing and then you expect something to come out, then obviously you're disappointed. So,
and then we get in trouble, and then we get pulled off the air, and then we can't entertain you. So
yeah, exactly, right? So that's really where we're gonna focus today's episode. And just to be make everybody aware, the information is actually available for what I'm going to show you across various different blogs and sites and things like that on the internet today. So what I thought was really important, because of the fact that there's disparate sources for all these different things, I wanted to bring it all together so that, you know, you got a holistic view as to what is, you know, what's new and then what's coming out, so that you can get a better understanding of, you know, what you can look forward to as the current line of thinking within the product team is concerned. So that's really what we're going to show today. Cool. And so if you have any questions about what we're showing or what we're talking about, then definitely let's talk.
And actually, just for added fun, since we will spend a lot of time in Visual Studio, feel free to open up Visual Studio on your end and just follow what Paul's doing.
Well, yeah, except they may not have the updates installed on their machines.
So this would be a great time to put those updates on.
Yes. All right. Oh, I just lost my...
Yeah, man, what are you doing?
I don't know.
It's not like we're live or anything.
Exactly. But before we begin, I want to talk a little bit about our release strategy. And when I say our, I'm talking specifically the Visual Studio team's release strategy, because you may already know this, but you may not. We've actually changed the cadence as to how we release our software. And in fact, that's actually true of basically almost all the product teams at Microsoft, but specifically we'll focus on, as you imagine, Visual Studio today. And to do that, I want to sort of bring up this specific slide. Now, if you're familiar with modern application lifecycle management methodologies like Agile, Scrum, Kanban, all those types of things, this chart may actually look somewhat familiar to you, at least in concept. And the whole idea behind this is to say that instead of providing a monolithic release every 2 years for our software, beyond things such as service packs, we've decided that the Visual Studio team decided that it's probably best to actually provide incremental value over quarterly basis. And that's really, really important so that we can actually give you the give you the features that you need as a developer more quickly so that you can actually build that great software that you're really needing to build and provide that value to your users. So as you can see here, we have, you know, Visual Studio Update 1, Update 2, all the way to Update N. And the intent is that we actually have quarterly updates. Now, the quarterly could mean, you know, give or take a few weeks here or there, but the intent is that every quarter of the calendar year, we make an effort to provide an update. So Update 1 is usually the spring update, and then Update 2 is the summer, Update 3 is the fall, and the Update 4 is sort of the winter one, if you want to call it that. But we call it by numbers because maybe we have multiple different beyond 4 updates in a year potentially as well.
So I don't know about you guys, but I have it actually marked down my calendar.
I don't.
Okay. So, I look at Paul's tweets, and as soon as he says available, I match my calendar, and then I hit download.
There you go. That's right.
So listen to Paul on Twitter, P. LaBerge.
P. LaBerge, yeah, at P. LaBerge, if you want to learn about Visual Studio. So, I mean, basically, that's the on-premise version. So the software that you love and use today on-premise. So the Visual Studio integrated development environment on your PC. Now, why do I keep on losing my... There we go. As well as the you know, the server products like Team Foundation Server, Release Manager, Test Manager, all those types of things. The on-premise is basically on a quarterly update. Now, on the bottom, you'll see we actually have something called Visual Studio Online. Now, Visual Studio Online is our new cloud-based version of Visual Studio, and it contains a lot of workloads that are important to developers, such as, you know, managing version control and work items in the cloud, to managing your test cases and doing performance testing and load testing and all those types of things, as well as things such as like Application Insights, which is our analytics platform, which just came out as well. All that stuff is available on the cloud. And one of the great thing about the cloud is the fact that we can provide more incremental value very much more quickly than we can on-premise because of the fact that we sort of, quote unquote, own the servers, if you will. So the services that you consume as a developer, we're able to update those on a more frequent basis. And in fact, it's not an exact science, but every 3 weeks or so, the Visual Studio Online team is actually adding new features to the services that you know and love and use potentially. So the cadence is actually quicker online than it is on the updates for on-premise. And in fact, if you use Visual Studio Online, it's almost a bit of an early look at some of the things that might be coming into the on-premise versions as well. So some of the things that you see in TFS in the cloud, so Visual Studio Online is what we technically call TFS in the cloud now. Some of those features have been there for a little while, and we're bringing those features to the on-premise version as well. So just to give you an idea and why things may be a little bit different in the parlance of, you know, Visual Studio, instead of talking service packs, which is really just, you know, bug fixes and things like that, some incremental value in features, but we're actually adding features on a quarterly basis to our major versions. And that's really where we're talking about today. And really, to be honest, what we're going to focus on is the on-premise side of things rather than the cloud side of things today.
Shall we do a shameless plug then?
Go.
The last episode that we did on Breakpoint, which is just a month ago, can't believe that it's been actually that long, is available on demand. So on Channel 9, by all means, channel9.msdn.com/blogs/breakpoint, or you can actually just go to ak.ms/breakpoint. And then right at the top, you'll see previous episodes. Yep. Point being is that what we did last time was we actually literally went through all of Visual Studio. We did some cool examples with Visual Studio Online. So we won't do that today, but if you did want to deep dive into that, check out previous episode.
It's also available on Channel 9, if that's
I just
where
said
you're
that.
I thought you said just on Break.
Clearly, he wasn't paying attention.
No.
But that's fine. He was already prepping for this next slide, and that was his way of saying move on.
Yeah.
Got it.
Sorry.
By all means, your show.
I try not to listen to him.
I forgot.
Yeah. Okay.
Your show. Whatever.
Somebody's upset. All right. Okay, so let's talk about update two. Okay, so Visual Studio 2013 has been out since November of last year. And since then, we've actually provided two updates. Update one, which was a smaller update. So there wasn't a lot of features involved with that. But update two is actually fairly significant. And there's some things that we do want to sort of show you because I think there might be a value to you as a developer or as somebody that's actually in a software development project in general as well. So let's actually go through the IDE improvements. So the IDE being the integrated development environment where you actually do your code on your PC itself. So we'll start off with that. So the first thing is Microsoft Azure. So it wouldn't be a complete Microsoft presentation, as I say before, unless we talk about Microsoft Azure. So that's just the way we do things. But there's actually some pretty cool things about this, is the fact that Azure is becoming more interesting to, you know, IT organizations and to developers and to app builders and things like that. It's becoming something that is actually something that's of value to developers in building the solutions that they have because of the fact that, you know, it allows them to scale, just like the cloud would inherently sort of mention or sort of imply. We've actually made it a lot easier for you as a developer within Visual Studio to make use of Microsoft Azure. So some of the things that we're seeing are things such as the auto creation of, you know, ASP.NET sites using Microsoft Azure. And in this screenshot, you can sort of see this here. So on the bottom right-hand corner of the actual screenshot, you can see, for example, the Windows Azure section, and it basically says, you know, create the remote resources, create a website. And so instead of actually having to publish a website they have locally, you can actually push the website up automatically as part of your workflow, as part of that. And also, we have the same sort of idea around things such as SQL Azure, so our, you know, SQL Server as a service, if you will. The database capabilities as well. So if you create a database project using SQL Server database tooling or data tools, which is an add-on into Visual Studio, you can actually automatically push those schemas and all that kind of stuff that you've actually built right into Microsoft Azure from Visual Studio itself. So that's kind of cool. Okay.
I'm just laughing because as you're showing things on your screen, I'm just like, I don't have a camera behind you. I can't show your finger.
No, but that's okay. I tried to describe it. So.
Are you going to get into actually Windows Phone 8 stuff with 2013.2?
So yes and no. It depends. If the
question was, can we build Windows Phone 8 apps with Visual Studio 2013.2?
Absolutely. And so, yes, the answer is yes. We'll get into that in a second. And again, I don't know why this is doing this.
It's rumblings.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, better.
It's basically giving you a subtle hint to ditch PowerPoint and just go straight into Visual Studio.
Yes, well, we'll get there. We'll get there, I promise.
I think these guys are controlling it out there.
Yeah, it could be. So we also provide some new diagnostic improvements. So if you're a developer, you'll know that, and you use Visual Studio religiously, for example, if that's what you do, you'll probably be very familiar and very thankful for the diagnostic capabilities within Visual Studio. The reason for that is, you know, I know when I used to be a full-time developer and dev lead and things like that, it was sometimes very difficult to find bugs or reproduce bugs that have been found in testing and things like that. The not works on my machine sort of syndrome, if you want to call
always.
It, right?
Always. Yeah. Or so it worked yesterday.
It worked yesterday and doesn't work today and the code didn't change, right? So, yeah. So
works on my computer.
Exactly, right? So now it's your turn not to listen because I just said that. Except I said machine instead of computer.
So clearly it was different.
Yeah. So anyways, let's get back to the slide. There's been some improvements to IntelliTrace, and if you know IntelliTrace, you probably love it already. This is a feature within Visual Studio Ultimate that allows you to, I call it a time machine in a way, right? So the intent there is that whenever something happens, either whatever environment you're in, so dev, staging, test, whatever environments you have, prod even, you want to provide some insight for developers if something goes wrong. And the way we can do that is use IntelliTrace logging. Now, it can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. When you're in production, you probably want it a little lighter than it would be heavy. But certainly in environments prior to production, it may make sense for you to have heavier logging. And the intent there is as something goes wrong, IntelliTrace will work in the background on the machine or the server and sort of log everything that's happening, including things such as memory calls and you know, various different objects in memory and things like that. So if something is going wrong, you can actually go back in time to when and the problem actually happened, take a look at what happened in Visual Studio using the diagnostic capabilities, and go right from there to figure out what the issue is. It's a beautiful thing. It's been around since, I think, Visual Studio 2010. But with every update, we're including new features. And
nobody uses it to its fullest extent. That's the part that kills me.
I wouldn't say nobody. A lot of people do. But
you're right.
But the thing...
Not enough.
Yeah, well, it depends on what you're trying to do, right? I mean, if you're building websites and you need high scalability and you want to have good monitoring capabilities, especially if you're talking about enterprise software, right? This is something that is very, very valuable to a lot of people, right?
Now, this works on-premise and in the cloud, too.
Yes, you can use IntelliTrace in the cloud as well.
Yep. Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, that's only with MSDN Ultimate, though, isn't it?
It is an Ultimate SKU feature, yes. Yeah. So,
just putting it out there, that's actually one of the reasons for me, when I talk to a lot of developers, a lot of them move over to the Ultimate SKU for all of these.
Exactly.
IntelliTrace being probably one of the top features, mm-hmm. and especially now that it works both on-premise and in the cloud, then that just makes it that much more valuable.
Exactly. So some of the things that we're adding, for example, is, you know, the ability to navigate directly to MVC methods, so Model View Controller, which is a pattern. So you have the ability to go directly to the code where depending on what things are happening things. So it's not something that is like totally completely different from, you know, or earth shattering, but it does help. The other ability, and this one's actually kind of cool, is the fact that you can jump directly to your SQL statements within your database, which is kind of cool itself as well, right?
SQL Server debugging.
Yeah, exactly, right? So whereas, you know, you had to follow the call stack and go, you know, step by step, and then you go into, you know, a call to a database, and then you have to go into, you know, SQL Server Express Studio or SQL Server Studio, Management Studio, I should say, and then debug from there and take a look at your query tables and things like that. You can actually do that in tandem now, which is kind of cool.
Now, Jeff wants to know if this can actually be extended also to third-party software using code such as Unity 3D. I don't think it's quite there yet.
That's a great question, and the answer is I don't know.
But if that's something that you want, Unity. You should tell them. Right?
So it's a good point. Like, I mean, if it's a .NET assembly...
Then it should work.
You may not get the full fidelity because you may not have the symbol tables, for example, that are necessary for your actual code, because I don't know if Unity provides the symbol tables for debugging purposes and things like that as part of their process, but it is something that could potentially work. At least you could get some aggregate information using IntelliTrace, I would think, but I don't know for sure. So that's a good question.
How about that? We'll check into it. Stay tuned to CDN Devs on Twitter, and I'll tweet out the answer as soon as we get it.
Cool. And then finally, the last thing on the IntelliTrace, and this is really interesting for a lot of people that are getting into mobile dev, is app resource usage. So the intent behind a mobile phone or a tablet is the fact that it's mobile. But these are low power devices that, you know, are not necessarily a full horsepower PC and things like that. And as a result, you have to be much more careful about how you manage the resources, battery, CPU, you know, memory, all those types of things are limited compared to your typical PC. Well, we've actually provided you with the ability to manage or take a look at some of the things within your mobile applications, the resources that you're using. So you can find out right away if, you know, you add a new feature to your Windows Phone application, for example, and you get some complaints saying, you know, I installed this new version and all of a sudden my battery's going down. Well, you can actually use IntelliTrace to find out exactly what's going wrong with it.
Yeah, kind of like forgetting to turn off using location services.
Yeah, if you're pinging
like that,
all
if you're
the time.
Constantly pinging to get a GPS signal when you really don't need it.
Yep. Or even if you're spinning in the background doing something that is just, you know, just needs a lot of horsepower that maybe you can probably, you know, refine
loop.
Or yeah, those types of things, right? So all right, so there was a question about Windows Phone and can you use Visual Studio to build for Windows Phone? And
wait,
the answer is...
you put it in your deck that quickly?
No. Oh, you're
here
funny.
I was thinking that you're doing things in real time and talking.
So here you can sort of see right here, the new project type is the fact that we've added some new capabilities. So with Visual Studio 2012, you could build Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8.1 applications. With Visual Studio 2013, just with update 1 or below, you could have you build Windows Phone 8 applications or Windows Phone 8.0 or Windows 8.1 applications. With update 2, we've added the ability to do two new things within the mobile space. One is you can actually build Windows Phone 8.1 applications now, which is a big deal for those of you that don't know because of the fact that the API coverage between Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1 is around 95% now. I think, don't quote me on that, but I think that's basically what we're looking at. But we've also added this new capability. And if you saw something, if you watched any of the sessions or the keynotes from our build conference that we had in April, there was a big announcement that was made about the fact that we're adding something called universal apps. And a universal app is basically a ability for you to create applications for Windows, Windows Store apps that is, as well as Windows Phone 8.1 apps that share code between them in a very, very efficient way so that you can actually, you know, create one code base that actually targets both Windows and Windows Phone. So that's the concept of the universal app. And as you can sort of see on the screenshot, we have, you know, a number of different types of universal app types that you can actually create. Now that's cool because if you wanted to target Windows Store and Windows Phone, you can do that using this if you want. Now, you don't have to use a universal app to share code between Windows and Windows Phone. There's other ways around that. And in a previous Breakpoint episode with Mark Ortega, when we talked about Xamarin, for example, before we actually got deep into the Xamarin side of things, he actually went through how you can share code between Windows Phone and Windows 8 without using a universal app. So again,
Episode 4.
March or something like that,
So basically he went through taking an app and then refactoring it and then putting it into portable class libraries and then bringing on Xamarin to do iOS and then Android or whichever way around. Point being, with Xamarin, you can cover all of the other platforms.
Yep.
Universal app allows you to actually do the Windows platforms.
You got it.
Right. Yep. Now, here's the question, though. What would you say in one line or less, since I know I have to restrict Paul on time, in one line or less, what would be the difference between universal apps and just portable class libraries? Because portable class libraries was there before universal apps came about.
Yeah, so it's a good question. And the idea behind a portable class library, if you're not familiar with it, is the fact that you create a library of code that becomes a DLL or something like that, right? And it's shared code between, you know, Windows Phone, Windows 8, maybe iOS through Xamarin or Android through Xamarin or even Xbox even if you wanted to. The difference is, conceptually, at the low level, they're actually fairly similar in the fact that the intent is that you share code. But what the universal app process does is it actually makes it a whole lot easier, so you don't have to build out that scaffolding for you to do that. It does it automatically for you. In fact, let's actually show it.
Yeah, so, demo. By the way, that was way more than one line answer, but that's fine.
I don't care.
Only because it goes to a demo, and that's okay.
All right, so we're in Visual Studio now, and I'm just going to go to File. So I'm in, just so you know, so go to Help About Microsoft Visual Studio. And you can see here it's version 12, which is actually Visual Studio 2013. I am using the Ultimate Edition, and we are on update 2 on this one. Okay, so you can sort of see that. So I'll go to File, wait for this to show up.
By the way, this is the part where you guys all follow along on your Visual Studio as well.
If you have update 2. Otherwise, you will be missing some things here. But File, New Project. And you can see we'll get rid of Visual Basic because I prefer C Sharp personally. So basically, if you see here, there's store apps. And this is interesting because basically what this is sort of a new sort of setup for Windows Phone and Windows 8. So you can see here, for example, we have Universal Apps, Windows Apps, and Windows Phone Apps. So we'll just go to Universal Apps. And you can sort of see here we have a blank app. We can have a hub app. We can have a class library, so you can create a class library that is completely compatible with Universal Apps if you want, which is actually the same type of thing that you would do if you were just creating a new class library yourself. And then also, runtime component if you want. So we'll just create quickly a hub app, for example, and you can sort of see a view of what it looks like. So I'll just click OK. Now we're not actually going to create an app. We're just going to show you a bit of the structure here so that you can sort of see how this works. So wait for the components to actually build through the project template.
Insert compile music here.
Yep.
Right? We went away from the Jeopardy music. Now we're just going to do compile music.
What is compile music?
I don't know. We have to think of what compile music should be.
Maybe somebody can provide a suggestion. There you go.
Yeah, that would be actually a great use of the chat, guys. Let us know what kind of tune should we put on while Paul is compiling.
Okay, so the project structure is sort of set up. Now I'm going to zoom in on this just so we can see this a little bit more. So you can see without me doing anything, I created here, for example, we have a Windows 8.1 application and a Windows Phone 8.1 application. So it's actually using, it's created those two different projects as part of the solution structure for me automatically, so I don't have to do anything here. And that's cool because it allows me to, create my application and really focus in on the features of my application itself. So it just takes away some of the work that you would typically have to do otherwise. And you can also see here that we have this shared. And I'll scroll a little bit down so you can see that as well. So wait for it. You can see here, for example, on the shared side, we have assets, common code, a data model, so you can provide a common data model between the two different form factors, Windows Phone and Windows 8, and then a whole bunch of things like application strings and things like that if you want. So the intent here is that you take all the stuff that's common, so the application logic, if you will, of your application, and you put this in this shared component. And then once you've had that shared component, you can actually create the user interface for Windows 8 and for Windows Phone because they've already been created. And in fact, if you have Xamarin, you can actually add an iOS and Android or even Google Glass if you wanted to and things like that, because I think that's something that they're going to support from what I understood from Build. But the intent there is that you have all these different things and it makes it a whole lot easier for you to do. Now, like I said, you can do this manually yourself. There's nothing too wild about this, but it is something that's available to you. The one caveat around this, well, there's two caveats. One is it only works for Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1. So if you want to build a Phone 8 or a Phone 7 application, it doesn't automatically put it in that. So you may have to do some extra work if you have a Phone 7 application, for example, or if you have just a plain Windows 8 application rather than 8.1 application. So that's the first caveat. The second caveat is depending on what your applications are, if you're building this as a consumer application that you want to monetize, the way these universal apps work is when you publish, you create the code and you've tested it and you're ready to go to get it certified in the various different stores, the Windows Store and the Windows Phone Store, and you're actually charging for it, say, for example, $2.99 for the application. The user basically can, buy it on Windows Phone Store for $2.99 and automatically that user gets it on the Windows Store for free. Because it's basically that's the model it is. Now, having said that, if I don't know if it's called sneaky or not, but say, for example, you wanted it on the Windows Phone Store for $2.99, you can actually set a different cost for your Windows 8 application, say $4.99 if you want. But the intent is the same. So if you buy it on the Windows Store, you automatically get the Windows Phone app for free as well. Something just to keep in mind, so just be aware of that. So, because I know that's a bit of a gotcha for some developers out there. All right, so let's get back to it. TypeScript. Okay, so if you've never heard of TypeScript before, this is actually something that I think is kind of cool. Again, we talked about the fact, admittedly, I'm not a JavaScript developer. I'm about as dangerous as it come with JavaScript.
Hence the notes you will
see.
Yeah,
exactly, right? But the intent behind JavaScript is the fact that it was a lightweight sort of script that allowed you to build out your web applications that had some functionality on the browser side. But obviously JavaScript has evolved a great deal. We even provide, as part of Windows and Windows Phone, the ability to create native applications using JavaScript, Cascade style sheets, and HTML as well. But it's also available now for the server side. So if you use Node.js or if you've heard of Node.js, this is actually something that's becoming very, very popular. So JavaScript is here to stay in a lot of ways. And the intent behind TypeScript is that it adds things like type safety and those types of things. So the ability to have typecasting of your variables and things like that within JavaScript, which is currently not available. So I'm actually going to go into this. So I'm going to close the solution that we just created.
I love that you're steamrolling ahead, but we're all chatting about what music it is that we're going to do for your compile time.
The proverbial can of worms.
Well, yeah. So this is the beauty of coming in to watch the show live. You get to participate in all of the awesome chats. So
exactly.
We have some very interesting suggestions.
I'm sure.
I'm not going to go over it here, but I was going to tell you before, but you're just like, yes. And you know why he's steaming ahead, too, because I challenged him to actually finish on time today.
Well, I don't think we will. We'll see. So here we are. Okay, so I'm opening up a new project. Now, one of the things within Update 2 that's automatically there is you'll see this new TypeScript project. So you have HTML application with TypeScript now available. So this is out of the box as part of the project templates that you have. So I'm going to click OK, and we'll just wait for it to create. Now, we're not going to do anything with the typical structure here. I'm not going to create an application using TypeScript. What I am going to do is I'm going to create a new TypeScript file. So I'm going to go right-click on the project, File, Add, and then TypeScript file. We're just going to create something. So we'll just call this My Demo, just for the heck of it. So what we're going to do is I'm just going to create some sample JavaScript, some typical JavaScript right now. So I'm going to create a function.
Here's the moment of truth.
Yeah, we'll see if this actually works, right?
It compiles.
Yeah.
If not, we have a song for that,
yeah, but
too.
We don't compile JavaScript. We interpret it.
Ooh, yes. Touche. Well
okay.
Done.
So here we have, as you can see, we have full IntelliSense on JavaScript. And I'm going to do a sort function. So sort by name, for example. And we'll give it a parameter of A. And we'll add that. And then inside, we're going to say something like, hold on, let's see here. Let's see, var result equals a.slice 0, okay.
Hey, Paul, any chance we can get your font a little bit bigger there?
Oh, sorry, I thought I actually created it a little bit bigger. That's a good point. Thank you.
Yeah. I just figured,
It's probably because
If we're going to do some code, we might as well be able to see it.
That's a little better.
Can we see it now? Notice how my hand keeps coming in and out of the screen? You can't because you're so focused. It's great.
Yes, I can see it.
That's fine. It's all good.
Yeah. I'll deal with you later. Okay, so here we have, now I got to go to result.sort and then function. So as you can see, it's getting a little complicated even in this simple idea, right? So we have the sort function that we're creating, and now I need to create the components of this. So I'm going to return, and of course my mouse is getting in the way here, return x.name.local compare. And y.name. Okay. And give it that, and then finally do one more here. And then the last thing I want to do is I want to return the result. So really, this is just a sorting function. It's not really important what it does. Now, this is interesting because, you know, this is just typical JavaScript. So the interesting thing about TypeScript is it's JavaScript. Some people call it a superset of TypeScript, a superset of JavaScript, but in fact, it's just plain JavaScript. It's just how we've done some implementation. So that's kind of cool right there. But now let's add some things around, say, for example, I want to add some capabilities around saying, well, A, we're going to say we want it to create an array. So we're going to say it's an array of anything, okay? So all of a sudden here, you can see, for example, if I can hover over this, and you see all of a sudden we have some type capabilities or some type inferences on the variable that we have actually created. So you can see here that it knows that it's an array of anything and things like that. But now what happens if we decide to do something else? So I'm going to actually go here and go to the very top and create an interface. So I'm going to create the interface here, and I'm going to say interface entity. And then we'll say name string, okay? So now we've done that, and we can see here, for example, we have the ability to take a look at this, and we know right away, where's my mouse? My mouse just got lost. There we are. Wow. Okay. So you can see, for example, if we change this to entity array instead of any type of thing, so you can see all of a sudden here, if I hover over this, now it knows it's an entity. So I can do all sorts of things with this, right? So I can take a look here, and if I go to, say, for example, say a dot, you can see all the various different things that are associated with this that allow me to do some cool things with this variable, which I probably couldn't have done before because of the fact that it didn't necessarily know what type of a type it was. So right away, there's some cool things there that allow you to do that. But also, you can see here, it knows, for example, that there's some problems with this specific variable, like local compare a dot. So there's something wrong here. So if I go here and I say, for example, locale compare, and we just get rid of it, now it's actually knowing this. So right away, some interesting things here. So it's a very, very simple example of some of the things that TypeScript provides you. It's just the fact that you have the ability to create some type safety and to provide a little bit more structure around your JavaScript code, which is kind of cool. So that's basically TypeScript in a nutshell. And this is all sort of out of the box. And it's RTM'd. It's version 1.0, so it's not a beta version anymore. And in fact, if you're interested more on TypeScript, I think it's typescriptlang.org. And you can download it. It's actually open source as well.
I was just telling the guys and gals on the chat that you had me at VAR. Yeah. I was sold.
Oh, God. Nerd humor.
The truth is that because of the fact that now it is objects, the fact that we have the IntelliScript, that we have all these things, it really is not that much different now than C Sharp, which means that I can do it without learning a new language.
Exactly.
Which makes me all the more wanting to actually try it.
Yep.
Right? Because the last thing that I need is to learn something new. I'm getting too old for that.
Yeah.
Look at me, I'm ancient.
I'm not going to say the Lethal Weapon line about getting too old for this. Whatever. Okay. Yeah. So anyways, web tools. Let's move on.
As he goes rapidly along.
I'm 22 minutes left.
And I got funny.
Yeah, exactly. So you may not already know this if you've not used Visual Studio as a web development environment, but it's actually really awesome. And of course, don't take my word for it because I am biased because I sell these tools for a living. But the intent is, if you've never tried using Visual Studio to build web applications, websites, whatever, I seriously suggest you at least download the trial and take a look at what you can do, because there's so many good things that are built into the web tools for Visual Studio. And some of the things that we have here is we've added new things within Update 2 around a full-featured JSON editor, you know, color coding and formatting and warning flags and all that kind of stuff, as you can see right here. And we've also provided some debugger support for JSON. So, as you can see right here, there's the JSON visualizer in addition to the text, XML, and HTML. So I'm actually going to show that to you very, very quickly. So I'm going to go here into this demo. So this demo is just something that I actually downloaded from the dev.windows.com site, so the samples. So this is just a JSON demo. So if I actually go to, I got a breakpoint right here. Yeah,
ooh,
first time we use the word breakpoint
nice.
For real, right?
Did you guys all catch that? I think we should rewind a couple of seconds, do it again.
Breakpoint.
Nice. There.
Okay.
Love it.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to debug. And as you can see here, we have this JSON input.txt. So it's just actual JSON text, text that's supposed to be represented as a JSON object. So if you're not familiar with it, what JSON is, it's JavaScript object notation. So it's just actually a very lightweight way to provide information about an object and fields and things like that. Because a lot of people use XML, and that's perfectly fine, but it can get a little bit heavy if you're doing traffic back and forth between the client and the server and stuff like that. So this is just one of the more interesting ways to provide that capability. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to debug on the local machine. It's going to create this Windows Store app. Of course, it's going to give me an error.
Of course. Live demos.
Oh, because it's screen resolution below 1024. Okay, that's awesome. So instead,
it's not. It's the best part.
So I'm just going to go here, and I'm going to debug, start new instance on the Windows Phone version. So let's see what we can do here.
So I actually kept it on the screen so that everybody can see your face as the error comes up.
Yeah, of course. So what's happening here is really not important. We'll just wait for it to actually hit this breakpoint. Might take a little bit of time. So there's my Windows Phone emulator that showed up. We'll just wait for the application to load up inside. There we go. Windows Platform Sample. And if we take a look at this,
where'd it go?
Okay. Go to Parse and Stringify.
And there we are.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. Okay, so we're here now. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to step into this. And as you can see, it's now putting it in the variable here. And then I'm just going to click on this so that we actually get the variable instantiated. So the details of the actual app are not important. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hover over this. And so as you can see here, the text, we have the text version of this. And you see here, it might be a little bit tough to see, so let's zoom this in. Well, of course I can't because it's not letting me do that and zoom in. But if I do this, you see there's this magnifying glass. And this magnifying glass means that this is an inspectable element. And right now the value of it is all this text, which is completely unreadable in a lot of ways unless you are a JSON parser yourself. So if I click on this, you can see, for example, the JSON visualizer. Now, I can actually bring this up, and right away you can see, for example, here's a lot nicer view of this text that was actually provided, so you can actually see the various different things, all the various different components of it. So this wasn't available before Update 2, and this is something that is very, very valuable from a debugging standpoint to make sure that your JSON is formatted properly and things like that. So it's another value-add type of thing that's provided.
Especially if you're using someone else's JSON and that you don't actually know how to read it ahead of time, that would be, I can't even begin to imagine how many hours I spent trying to figure out someone else's JSON, and I'm just like, it'd be really nice if I could just walk through it,
yep,
like an object tree. And so I would sit there and I would write the code to load it into an object and create the array, blah, 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 blah. Half an hour later, because of course I need to go look up the information on how to do that, but it's a different story altogether. In theory, I would have learned after the first time. But now it just all does that for you, mm-hmm, and you've just saved yourself, especially if you're like me, half an hour, simply because you wanted to see the response of the JSON.
Yeah, and I mean, this JSON is really, really small, but if you had a very large JSON object for whatever reason, and typically you're not supposed to do that, but I mean, if your objects are large, then that becomes completely unreadable, and then you have to copy and paste into a text editor and then do all sorts of unnatural things to actually view it in a proper way, right? So.
Right, and most of these days, now correct me if I'm wrong, most of these days, app integration, mm-hmm, works on JSON with web services and stuff like that too, right? That's, yep, sort of like the integration language of choice these days.
Yeah,
right? So you can imagine.
Because it's lightweight.
Right, so any tools to make that easier for you.
Yep. Makes it, yeah, totally.
Huge.
Yeah. So hopefully that was cool. If you're a developer, that's pretty cool.
Of course
stuff.
You're a developer, you're watching this show, yes. But... Wow. What he meant is, if you work with JSON and are a cool developer, actually you're all cool
there.
Anyway, because again, you're watching this show. But
exactly.
Anyway, continue on.
Okay, so Team Foundation Server. So this is our product that allows you to manage your version controlling as well as your project structure and work items and how you actually, assign tasks to various different components of or people within your dev team and things like that. I'm not going to get into details as to what it is. There's lots of really good information out there, including some of our previous Breakpoint episodes, so we'll just leave that at that. But there are some updates that are I wouldn't say earth-shattering, but they're actually kind of nice. So the first one is work item tagging. So this has been available in the Visual Studio Online side of things for a little while now. But one of the things that we've been able to do within TFS, Team Foundation Server on-premise, is yes, we've had tagging available on TFS 2013 for a while now, but you weren't able to do things such as create, create work items within Visual Studio, the IDE, and use tags or create tags as part of that as well. Now, the reason why tags are really interesting is it allows you to provide some context or some metadata around a specific task or work item. So you could see, for example, there might be some information. Maybe it's something around saying this is like a website version of the task. It affects a website and maybe the mobile app. You can add tags for basically anything that you want. So that's something that we've actually added into Visual Studio now to allow you to do that, as well as within Excel. So if you've used TFS in the past, you know that you're able to create or to download the data from TFS into Excel and work with it from there. Now you can actually do things with tagging as well as part of that. The other thing that we are providing is the ability to determine who can create tags. Because while tags are very useful, it can get very, very messy very quickly, right? So if anybody can just create a tag for a work item, then you end up with like millions of tags. It's kind of like a blog, right? If you have tags associated with a blog and everybody sort of puts in whatever they want, it becomes messy from that standpoint as well. So this is something that allows you to manage that. And the last thing is from a querying standpoint. So the ability to query within TFS on tags. So instead of just saying query on this iteration or this work item's only for me and things like that, you can also query on the tags as well, which is very, very valuable because it allows you to really sort of figure out exactly, you know, maybe there's work items that are specific to certain things, but if they have an association to another part of the project, say, for example, you're working on the website and there's a task associated with the website work, but it also has need to work with the mobile side. Maybe there's a task or a tag associated with the mobile side of things. You can actually do that as well. So that's there. The other thing that we're providing is charting improvements. So something, again, that's been in Visual Studio Online for a little while is if you have a chart that's really important to you in your team, so for example, you can see here the product backlog as the example. Or say, for example, it's a bug tracking, so how many bugs and who's actually involved with those bugs and things like that. You can actually pin that to your start screen of your portal for your TFS portal. So that's actually something that's very, very good because at a glance, you can get a view of exactly how healthy your project is. And again, sort of minor but maybe useful in some ways is now you can customize the colors of those charts. Whereas we've sort of provided a default to say, okay, well, this is what you're going to get with these colors. Maybe there's some branding things or maybe you prefer certain color sort of coding because you use that in other projects as well. Now you can do that. And this is actually kind of cool, it's test planning. So whereas you had test plans and you had to get them from the TFS portal, or maybe you downloaded it via Visual Studio or the Test Manager product that's part of Visual Studio Test Pro or Visual Studio Ultimate, you can now export this to HTML and send it via email, for example. So this is something that makes it a whole lot more readable. It democratizes, if you will, the test plan so you can actually share this in a much greater way. And it allows you to really sort of send off the information that's important from a testing standpoint. And also you can sort of see here on this window, you can decide what exactly you want to include within the test plan that you're sending via email. So for example, you know, if you want properties, in this case, they don't want to add the run settings, for example, you can basically pick and choose the components that are most important to you that you want to share. So not necessarily earth-shattering, but actually very, very important from a testing standpoint.
You say not earth-shattering, but I remember, it feels like we always have this on every single one of the episodes. Back in the day, we used to write those test plans in Word.
Yeah.
Or some of us would write it in Excel, to which, of course, I never understood why words belong in Excel. But anyway, different story. Now, this is like the other way around, where, hey, you're going to actually write this stuff within the Visual Studio environment. You're going to have all the metadata around it. And then for those that you need to share it, because in theory, that was always the excuse. We need to write it in Word because we need to share it with everybody. Mm-hmm. So now we can actually do it in Visual Studio, we can write it out, we can have all the proper meta tags and metadata around it, export it, and share that. So ultimately, the end result is the same, except way smarter work.
Yeah, I mean, the ability to manage your test plans directly within TFS or in Visual Studio, for example, has been there for a while. But yeah, definitely a boom because of the fact that, you know, you don't have to do that export. Although there are some tools that allow you to export and import from Office and all that kind of stuff too.
Right, but it's not built in. That's something that you need to go and buy yet again.
Yes, exactly.
So I guess point being, write it in here so that you can use it and then actually bring it as part of your overall solution and then export.
Yeah, and the cool thing is any data that you put in TFS is actually TFS in the back end from a SQL Server standpoint is an analytical, like it's an OLAP cube, if you will.
Right.
So you can actually do some, you know, reporting and things like that. So we use reporting services or analytics services on the data within TFS so you can find out over time, you know, like, you know, slowly changing dimensions and all that kind of stuff as well.
So but whatever you do, and I learned this the hard way,
uh-oh,
do not modify that database. Yeah. Read from it, do whatever you want, but don't add columns and tables and
you can. There's tools around that, probably out of scope for this. Right. Maybe that's a good breakpoint episode for the future. But basically, yeah, you do have to be careful about what you add or customize within the product.
Okay. Yeah. So let's put a breakpoint on that.
All right. Git.
I cracked myself up. I'm sorry.
That's all good. I got it. I just
hopefully
decided not to ignore it.
Hopefully you guys got that one. But
yeah,
Paul's just so determined to...
I got it. I just ignored it. But yeah.
It's fine.
So anyways.
I'm used to you ignoring me.
Yeah. So there's a few things around Git. I'm not going to go through all this but because we are running out of time. But basically, you know, there's all sorts of enhancements within Git for TFS as well. So if you're a Git lover, this is something that that is awesome. You know, you have the ability to do a number of different things that you weren't able to do prior to update 2. All right. So we're going to quickly go through some of the things that you can expect in Update 3. Update 3 is currently in CTP, Community Technology Preview, version 2. So
maybe we should add a couple more on there. Yeah. CTP of 3, version 2.23579.
Yeah, exactly, right. So the thing that I want to mention here is you can download it today and put it on. Just be careful because it's not release yet. So
and don't go putting it on a production machine.
Yeah, exactly.
Just
right.
So putting it out there.
Everything that we're talking about from this slide onward, and we got 8 minutes to really try and fly through this. You just have to be careful, be with it. So sandbox it. Do whatever you need to do.
Virtual machines on Azure.
Yep. So there's a few things within the integrated development environment that we're providing as part of Visual Studio 2013 Update 3. So Application Insights, which is our new Visual Studio Online analytics platform, is included out of the box. So you don't have to download the SDK and things like that. It's just there. So that's kind of cool. There's some other things around things such as mapping capabilities. So code maps, you know, you can have different color styles. So if you're doing code mapping and things like that within your project, before you couldn't actually manage the colors, which again, kind of like the TFS side of things, is not necessarily earth-shattering, but it's actually very, very pleasant to be able to manage your colors because maybe you have a certain set of taxonomies around how you use color and stuff like that.
Kind of like how I changed my color in the chat to the Visual Studio purple.
I never noticed, but yes, that's very cool. Nice.
To know how to touch.
Yes. There you go. That is not included within Visual Studio, by the way. So the other thing is CodeLens. So CodeLens is a really, really good product that we introduced in Visual Studio 2012. It gives you insight into different methods as to, you know, what's calling that method, what that method calls, all that kind of stuff. But also, it provides some version control capabilities, like who actually modified this method the last time and things like that. And it integrates with things like Link for presence. So if, say, for example, you have a question around a method that somebody changed, you can hover over the method name and then the code lens comes up and then you can actually start an IM conversation from Link or a voice conversation from Link right there. That's just some cool stuff. There's some cool things around that that are provided, that are now provided. So you can sort of read some of these other things, but again, I'm not gonna go too detailed into it, but this is some of the things that we're providing. From the debugger standpoint, we've added a few new things. So one of the cool things, or one of the annoying things, I should say, within Visual Studio was if you were building Windows Store applications, and for example, I tried to do the debugging on the Windows Store app for the TypeScript demo, or the JSON demo, I should say, but it didn't work because my screen resolution was too small for this. Basically, if you have multiple monitors, you could basically say, sometimes it shows up on your left-hand monitor. And say, for example, the left-hand monitor is the one that you want your code to show up because that's what you're used to. Now you can basically say that I want this the Windows Store debugging to go to the other monitor and remember that it stays there so that, you know, you leave, you shut down your computer for the day, and then you're all
set. I love that feature. I love it.
It is kind of cool, right?
I love it.
Yeah. We also provide a whole bunch of things around, you know, mapping for the debugger, as you can see right there. So you can zoom right into a specific call stack if that's something that you spend a lot of time on. So you can set the preferences for that. Makes just a little bit easier and less time consuming. And then you can see things around 32-bit app support for .NET Native and things like that. So nothing too wild there. The analysis side. So this is some of the things around, you know, we talked about IntelliTrace, for example, earlier. Well, we're adding some new things around IntelliTrace as well. So skip right to the performance details within Application Insights. So we're adding more integration between our analytics platform on Visual Studio Online and IntelliTrace so that you can actually make use of both at the same time, because there are some synergies that are, you know, you can leverage now as part of this. Did I actually just say synergies and leverage?
You did.
Oh my God.
You did. Those are big words for a Friday afternoon.
I failed for the day. That's horrible. I'm sorry.
I don't think you're drinking enough Dr. Pepper there.
It could be, yeah. And from the profiler standpoint, this is kind of cool. So the Performance and Diagnostics Hub can now open sessions for IE11, which is our newest version of Internet Explorer. So if you're doing a lot of web development and you're, you know, have some focus on Internet Explorer 11 as part of your target, there's some really cool tools within the profiler now that you can make use of in conjunction with the developer tools on Internet Explorer. Mm-hmm. Now you can do that with Visual Studio as well. Release management. So this is our deployment and DevOps tool with Visual Studio Ultimate. We provide you with a little bit more capabilities around PowerShell to manage and deploy configuration data. So not only is it the bits, the binary bits that you're actually providing, but also configuration data and maybe some, you know, actual data that's important to the application. We provide some further capabilities within PowerShell for you to make use of that so that you can actually deploy that. Now, I'm going through this really, really quickly. I'm sorry. Yeah, but we do have limited time left. By the way, before I continue, because I will forget, this is not a complete list of features. And because this is, you know, CTP, some of these features may not make it or may make it, but this is what has been publicly disclosed. So I just want to make sure that everybody's, I'm setting expectation properly with everybody.
It's
testing tools. Paul.
It's all good.
Yes.
It's all good. We love it.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're so silent on the chat because they're just so intent on knowing every single feature that you're going through.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they didn't tune out. So that's
nope. Everybody's still there.
All right.
Say hi to Paul, everyone.
Yeah.
Just
okay.
So that we know you're still there.
So testing tools. There's a lot of new information around some of the testing tools that we have. So things you can see right there. Adding custom fields to the workflows for test plans. That's something that's been actually asked on User Voice, which is our user portal for suggesting features to all of our products, not just Visual Studio. So this is something that we provided as part of user feedback, as well as the ability to take test plans using work item history, make changes, I should say, using work item history. This was also something that was asked for. And then we've also added things such as permissioning around access to test suites. So there are some permissions capabilities already within our test management tooling, but it wasn't as fine-grained as a lot of people would like, so we've actually added some further permission tuning to that as well. Okay, so that was Visual Studio 2013 Update 3, currently in Community Technology Preview Version 2.
We're going to breathe.
Okay.
Now,
what was really cool was, and I actually didn't expect this myself, this came as a surprise to me, but we are providing an early look at Visual Studio Codename 14.
In fact, they even called you out on the chat that the codename is VS14, not Visual Studio 14.
Is it really?
14.
Okay, VS14.
Dum-dum-dum.
All right, well, I'm going to check in
attention
on that because I'm not sure that's correct, but you're probably right anyways.
All right.
So anyways, VS14, codename VS14, is the next major version. So the next major version after Visual Studio 2013 is currently codename VS14. So this is very early, so definitely not recommend. In fact, they specifically say this at the beginning of the blog that announces it, saying, do not put this on a production machine because it will probably break your machine.
I think we should repeat that again. Do not.
Do not put this on a production machine.
I'm going to stick my hand in here like this. Do not. Underline. Yes. Here we go. All right.
There we go.
Back to you.
All right. So I'm just kidding, man.
Just making sure we got the do not.
Yeah, exactly. Do not do.
But view.
View. Okay. This isn't Dr. Seuss. But anyways, okay. How do you get Visual or VS 14? Well, the easiest way to do that is on Azure. So if you're using Microsoft Azure today, we've actually provided you with a virtual machine template with it pre-installed on there. So
there
as I said
go.
Before, right, you know, don't put this on a production machine because it may break things just because this is so early, the bits that we're providing. You have a self-contained environment right away. So in fact, I've actually gone to my virtual machine portal within Microsoft Azure. This is my own account. And as you can see here, I have PGL VS 14 running, which is my virtual machine running it. And in fact, you can see here, if I go to file new, or not file new, just new from gallery. By the way, you do get this even if you don't have an MSDN account. You can actually test out the VS 14 version on.
Really?
Yeah. So
that's cool.
So if you're not on MSDN, you won't get these SKUs that you see right here, but you will see this here. Okay. So this is the Visual Studio Professional 14 CTP1. So this is very early bits. So you can create a virtual machine with it. And in fact, that's what I've done. So if you take a look here, I got my virtual machine. And we'll move this over a little bit. No, it doesn't show it there. So we'll just go
to unpin it.
Yeah, that's okay. And then go to About Visual Studio. You can see right here, Microsoft Visual Studio 14 CTP.
Nice.
So you can play around with the bits early if you want to do that. All right, so we're 1 minute over. So I'm going to show you very quickly some of the things that they're thinking of providing as part of Visual Studio 14 or VS 14. Roslyn. So Roslyn is our .NET compiler platform. So it's basically, it's becoming more important. In fact, we open sourced it at Build 2014 in April as well, which is kind of cool. But it's basically it's basically the platform that's running how we compile code to .NET in a lot of ways now. It's revolutionary, I think, from a compiler theory standpoint, although not everybody is really into compiler theory and things, but it is very, very cool. And in fact, it's powering a bunch of things within VS 14 and then going forward. So Build, as you can see, IntelliSense, refactoring, CodeLens, debugging, and a bunch of other things are actually using the Roslyn platform to provide capabilities for that. And the other thing that's actually kind of cool is you can modify language keywords. So for example, what you can see here is, one of the things that they talked about at Build is the fact that, say, for example, you're from Brazil, because we've had a few people from Brazil here. So,
yeah.
You know, there's a large Portuguese-speaking population there. Say, for example, you're using C# or VB, and, you know, the keywords are, as you can already know, they're English. But say, for example, you want to modify some of those keywords like await and sync and protected and private.
You can do that in different languages.
You can actually change that to a different language
based
on the Roslyn platform, because basically it provides the metadata for that. So that's something you could do. I don't know if anybody really want to do that, because it's probably a lot of work because there's a lot of keywords in those languages. But it's possible as part of Roslyn.
So now we're moving from Universal Apps to Universal Visual Studio.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm. That's interesting. That brings a whole new level of learning how to code.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yep. So ASP.NET version next, or vNext, is basically included as part of the build for this CTP as well. So there's some cool things about it. It provides version 5 of ASP.NET MVC, or 6, I think it is, version 6 of ASP.NET MVC. As well as the typical, you know, ASP.NET 4.5 templates that are currently available today. There's some cool things around this. So we've added some new things, like we're making use of JSON within web projects in a different way too. So a new project file structure within ASP.NET vNext for managing assemblies and references and things like that. So you can take a look at that if you want. And you can also view changes that you make within your web projects without necessarily needing to build. Now, I don't know if that's universal across, but it is kind of cool to see some of this stuff. So, and again, thank you, Roslyn. Because of Roslyn, that's why we were able to do some of that stuff. So that's kind of cool. And then obviously, you can do things like publish to Azure or locally if you want, which is typically what you can do today as well. And last, but certainly not least, is C++. So C++ is coming back in a big way.
This is the comeback tour for C++.
Well, comeback tour, I think, started a few years ago, to be honest. But
that's true.
But there's some cool things. So we've actually provided some further support for the new language standard, which is 11, as you can see right here. And the specifics that we're looking at are the green, yellow, and the white boxes on the right-hand side for VS14. So you can sort of see some of the things that are there. I'm not going to go through all of this stuff. If you're interested, we can have a discussion offline. But there's lots of really cool things that are being added to C++ Engine within VS14. So, and by the way, the person that said it is VS14, I'm guessing he or she is correct because of the fact that I see VS14 here. Although the quotes are only around the 14, so I'm still not sure. We'll see.
Well, there was no contemplation about where the quotes were. That's what it was called.
Exactly. So we shall see. All right. So in conclusion, we're 5 minutes over, which is a record.
Pretty good, actually, for Paul.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah.
Hold on a second. For the record, it's pretty good for you.
Yes.
Not for me.
Yes.
I don't talk that much.
Yeah. Okay. So
anyway, Andre says hi from Brazil, by the way.
Hey.
Since you mentioned it
earlier.
All right.
Hope the World Cup is going great. So thanks, Andre. So in conclusion, the first thing that I just want to remind everybody of our new update schedule. So new cadence. Quarterly updates, give or take, for on-premise, and then roughly 3 weeks on Visual Studio Online. This allows us to bring these great new things to you as a developer, as a development team, much more quickly, so you don't have to worry about that. And again,
kind of like how you're worried about your PowerPoint.
I don't understand this. This is weird. But anyways,
it's called live.
Yeah, it's called live. Yeah. Oh, now
see?
It's just
case in point.
Yeah. So I'm not doing anything either. It's bizarre. So anyways, just be aware of that. And this is something that we've taken to heart. We've adopted agile methodologies to allow us to do this. So if you're into agile programming and those types of things, the reason why we're able to provide these updates at a much quicker cadence than we've had in the past, and this is true of not only just Visual Studio, but also of our other product teams as well that are picking up the pace on the updates, it's because they're using agile methodologies. In fact, if you go to the Visual Studio blog, there's actually a really great deep insight post as to the process by which the Visual Studio team adopted Agile, some of the problems that they had adopting it, and some of the things that they found were great about it and things, and including video interviews with the actual engineers and stuff. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, it's an amazing, amazing read and amazing set of videos to really sort of get deep into how big products such as Visual Studio managed to turn from a monolithic waterfall sort of way of doing things to a more rapid cadence using agile methodology. So just a little plug there. And finally, update 2 for Visual Studio 2013 is available as of today. So it's even available as an Azure virtual machine for MSDN subscribers only. So if you have Azure but you're not an MSDN subscriber, unfortunately you don't have access to that. CTP2 for update 3 is currently available. Hopefully, I don't have a specific date for you as to when update 3 will land, but stay tuned because I'm sure that they'll provide that information to you. And in fact, I'll tweet it out too. And then finally, the last one was supposed to be VS14, so whatever. Copy and paste strikes again. So we have that, and so basically VS14 is available for download, but the best way to do it is do it on an Azure virtual machine, and it's not only for MSDN subscribers, so just be aware of that so that you can actually test it out and be safe and not have to blow up your machine in the process. So thank you. I know Whirlwind Tour, and we're 8 minutes late now. I appreciate you sticking around. If you have any questions after the fact, we'll be here for a few more minutes, as well as we're on Twitter and things like that too. So on behalf
of Bears.
Yeah.
Jay Rosenblatt, the hashtag for the show, breakpoint.ca. Don't forget the CA because we are proudly Canadian.
Yes.
And we will most gladly be enjoying our extended long weekend to celebrate Canada's birthday on July the 1st, in case you didn't know when that was. Kudos to you for going through all of that and actually being able to breathe, number one, and number two, not, kind of on your words. That's number one.
I thought I did, but that's okay. Yeah.
Number two, the content was awesome.
Thank you.
And number three, here's the other thing I learned today, which is kind of cool. No thanks to you, but thanks to the chat. Did you know that live spelt backwards is evil?
It can be.
Isn't that awesome?
It can be.
I do this for a living, most of these things live, and I had no idea that evil. Anyway, so listen up.
I never thought of that. That's
important breaking news, okay? Get this. So yeah, last time we were contemplating, hey, are we going to have some summer shows? Are we not?
Mm-hmm.
We are confirmed. We are back. Why? Because you guys loved us. So that's great. Thank you so much for
yes,
that.
Thank you.
We have signed on for yet another full season. Having said that, of course, next month, super time, or I should say super special time, because it's not going to be last Friday of the month because, well, everybody's on vacation. So we've actually moved it up a bit to July the 18th.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that. Hopefully you'll join us.
Noon Eastern, but yes.
I guess I should say that, yeah. Noon Eastern, or GMT minus 5, depending on where you are in the world. We gotta start getting used to that. I'm going to stop saying EST. I'm just going to say GMT minus 5. Figure it out. Shout out to our friends in the UK that show up every time for this, even though it is Friday afternoon for you guys, which is awesome. So with that, we'll get the show posted for you. As usual, stay tuned to Twitter, CDN Devs, hashtag BreakpointCA, so that you know when it is available. Or, of course, you can always join us on the Microsoft Developer Facebook page. Just go into Facebook, search Microsoft Developer, and you will see our lovely faces sooner rather than later.
Yes.
Anything else you want to say before, because you have a tendency to steal a show anyway, right at the end, right when I'm about to close. So I'm going to give you the opportunity this time.
Happy summer, happy winter, depending on which hemisphere of the globe you're on.
Cool. And then until next time, where we see you at Paul's house, at his pool, make sure to waterproof your devices. We'll see you then, July 18th. In the meantime, have a good one. Happy Canada Day for those of you guys that are
watching us in
Canada. And for those of you that are watching from the States, happy
Independence Day.
I was going to say happy U.S. Day. What do I know? Anyway,
Independence Day.
Next week.
Absolutely.
All right. See ya.
Cheers. Thank you very much.